This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Thanks for tuning in this week. Hope everyone has had a pretty good weekend so far. Let's see what's going on with me. So this week I lost power. You know, we've been having all these storms. And on, gosh, I guess it was Tuesday night, the power went out and it stayed out for about 30 hours. So over a day I was without power at my apartment. And that was quite an interesting experience because it had been a while since something like that had happened. I grew up in the country, so I feel like the power went out all the time whenever I was a kid. But it was always for like 2 or 3 hours, you know. Going on a long stretch like this, living in the city, not having any power, interesting experience. You take so many things for granted. Like I kept walking into rooms and hitting the light switch, even though I know the power is out, but it's just habit. And thinking of things like, oh, I'll get out my laptop. Wait, it's not charged. And I don't have Wi-Fi anyway because I don't have power. So little things like that. And not being able to make coffee in the morning. Just something you take for granted every day. I can't believe I'm about to share this with you guys, but it's the Rachel Zimmerman Show audience. I trust you guys. I ended up ordering Uber Eats on Wednesday morning because I needed some coffee and couldn't make any at home. It didn't have like a French press or anything like that. So I ordered Starbucks and I spent way too much money. I'm not going to tell you how much I spent, but it was way too much money. I was like ashamed of it. I came to work the next day and told the guys about it and they were like, oh, let's talk about it on the show. And I'm like, I don't want people to know how much I spent on having coffee delivered to my front door. But it's 2024 and we get to do stuff like that. We get to waste our money on stuff like that. I still feel bad about it. But yeah, little things that you just take for granted, you just can't do whenever you don't have any electricity. So big shout out to Ameren. You know, it did take a while to get the power back on, but they had a lot of work to do. And those guys were out in the alleyway working until, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. So props to them. But it was a nice lesson, you know, to just kind of sit there, especially in the dark. You've got a candle going, can't watch TV, can't use your phone too much because then your phone's going to die. So you have to conserve the battery. And yeah, it's a nice lesson to just kind of be still and be grateful for what you have. And to try not to take those little things for granted as much. It's a nice reminder that all of that stuff can be taken away. You know, we all have really great lives. Or, you know, I don't want to generalize everyone. There might be someone with a terrible life listening right now. But in general, you have a roof over your head. You have electricity. You have food to eat. Your life is going pretty well if you focus on those basic things. It's pretty easy to be negative and focus on what you don't have and the goals you're not achieving. But no, I think it's important to kind of go back to basics. And that was a good lesson when that electricity went out, to just kind of bring me back down to earth, bring me back to basics. Another thing that happened this week is, I'm going to try not to get upset. One of my very good friends lost a parent. So that was very difficult. If you listen to the Dave Glover Show, you have heard about this. It's just hard watching someone you care about go through something like that. And it's another great reminder to be thankful and to enjoy our loved ones while they are here and to just, you know, don't take it for granted because people can be taken away at any moment. So that's kind of been the lesson of the week, is to be present and to be thankful for what's going on. All right. So that's kind of the lesson for this segment, you guys. Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to talk to Ray Hartman. Ray's a really nice guy. I have watched him on Donnybrook for years. And, you know, he just retired from that show a couple months ago. He is now running for Congress for the 2nd Congressional District. That's the seat that Ann Wagner holds. And Ray talks a lot about his media career. He also talks a lot about this congressional race and Ann Wagner quite a bit. So it's a great interview. I really enjoyed sitting down and talking to him. He's up next. Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, I'm here with Ray Hartman. He's a Democrat running for the 2nd Congressional District. You also know him from Donnybrook, the Riverfront Times, Substack, and many other places, even a KMOX alum. So, Ray, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
Tell me a little bit about your time on KMOX. We were talking about it a little bit off air, but recap for my listeners. I know they'd be interested in that.
It was a little ridiculous. I mean, I of course, my first business I started, which was the business that we had a newspaper called Profile St. Louis that was the forerunner to the Riverfront Times. I started when I was 24. Mm-hmm. I had just come from working for Kit Bond as a speechwriter in Jeff City, and we lost the election. Or, as I like to say, the voters wanted us back in the private sector. And the great, great Jack Carney had me on for 4 hours on his program, which at the time had a monstrous audience. And so that, because we put Jack on the cover of our first newspaper, a story I wrote. So my connection to say KMOX goes that far back, and he was wonderful to me. And I've always been part, I've had different connections to the station. For 10 years, Martin Dugan and I, our late great provocateur, did a Point Counterpoint on KMOX. So I think many listeners might remember that. We were on for about 10 years, a little 2 minutes yelling at each other about the issue. So that was my main connection. But in around the turn of the century, I was approached, and I guess flattered, to do the KMOX evening specials, which were on for 2 hours in the evenings during weekdays. And it's either good news or bad news. I was ridiculously flattered. I don't even know if flattered's the right word. To be associated with three rotating hosts. And one of them was me, the other was Bob Costas, mm-hmm. and the third was a guy named Jack Buck. And he was paired with Charlie Spoonhauer. So if you can imagine these two Hall of Fame giants and me, it's like, what am I doing in this movie, a commercial, you know? And they, of course, they're both, Costas still a good friend, and I, of course, Jack was wonderful to me and Charlie. But it was a little, what was bizarre about it was we had to get our own guests. And I always like to tell people, Bob Costas had, you know, the Dalai Lama in his speed dial. And Jack Buck could get anybody on the phone. I mean, anybody. And the first shows I remember were the very first shows. We each had our own two-hour show. Jack Buck talked to Stan Musial, and Bob Costas talked to Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, and I had to scramble to get three ex-mayors, and they were great. I mean, Vince Schabel, Freeman Bosley Jr., and Jim Conway agreed to sit down in the same interview, which was fun, but point was, I was a little outclassed, out of my element, but I've had great memories and associations with so many people. The late, great Ann Keefe was a mentor of mine from Game of Thrones. So much, I feel connected to KMOX. It's a very special station.
You had brought up Donnybrook. So we connected at Donnie Bash.
Right.
You were there handing out cards for your congressional campaign.
Right.
How was that for you emotionally after doing that for so long, being at that show and not being on stage?
It was fine. This is my family. I mean, I was on the air for 37 years, and all 37 with Bill McClellan, of course, and 20 plus with most of the others, Charlie Brennan. Another great name from KMOX, mm-hmm. and Wendy Weiss and Alvin Reed have all been on 15, 20 years or more, Charlie more than that. And it was fun. I mean, it was the first, you know, we had done 16 Donnie Bashes, something like that. So it was always a great time to be on a stage as a ham. Emotionally, it was fine. It was just, they did a great job. So it was like, you know, I kidded them. I said, you guys are going to start promoting this as the new improved Donnybrook now that I'm gone. They did a great job, and they still are. I actually watch it some, but it wasn't difficult emotionally. It was a little less, I wouldn't say it's stressful to be on there, but you have to kind of, you get kind of wound up. And
right.
For me, it was, of course, an unusual position to be in, to be handing out campaign cards. But it was a good run, and 37 years is a reasonable amount of time to be in the same place on a tile.
Absolutely. What was that decision like whenever you were like, okay, I've got to step away? Was that emotionally difficult?
No, it really wasn't, only because I am excited about what I'm doing.
Right.
I mean, yes, I mean, being away from my friends every week is mostly is you know, it's kind of sad. I mean, because we really are close. We didn't hang out so much other than at the station, but you get used to seeing people.
Right.
And having combat with them and so forth. So I miss them, but as far as this is such an interesting challenge for me. I mean, it's like starting a new company. And I tell people, I wake up feeling like I'm 24 again, starting the RFT. On the other hand, I take about two or three steps and, let's just say I ran 10 marathons and I'm not ready to run one right now. it's fine. And, I'm really excited about doing it. I think this is a really critical time. And we say that every 4 years, but this election, I think more than any other, we may have cried wolf on previous elections. Mm. I think one of the reasons I got in is I feel this is a pivotal time for our country. And I have been in the public eye for a long time. And I think people know me. What a lot of people come up to me at the grocery store have over the years say, well, I don't always agree with you, but I like your show or I like the way you say it, which is the best compliment somebody can give me. And I'm sort of running as that guy. I'm running I don't think I've said this, not this is a breaking news, but if I were elected to Congress, and I hope to be in November, one of the first things I'd want to do is apply for something called the Problem Solvers Caucus. I don't know if I'd get in because they vote people in. It's about 30 or 40 members of the House who work across the aisle together, Republicans and Democrats. They got to vote you in, so I don't know if they'd vote me in right away, but I'd be pounding their door down because that's my brand. I mean, I worked as a speechwriter for Kit Bond, who was a Republican in the 70s, and people know me as being very passionate, although I'm certainly a lot closer to the political center, I think, than I was in the early days. He's this wild liberal, and I'm still happy to answer to that adjective, but I think what we need more than ever is somebody who'll listen to the other side and who's accessible to the voters.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about your campaign in a second here, but you brought up that you founded the Riverfront Times at the age of 24. I mean, what was that like, being 24 and thinking, I'm going to start my own newspaper?
I don't know. I didn't know any better, I guess. I was unemployed. Actually, I say Riverfront Times technically started when I was 25 because we started Profile St. Louis, which was, Jack Carney's picture said the most familiar unfamiliar face in St. Louis because he was such a giant and nobody knew what he looked like. Mm. I mean, most people because he was a radio giant and he gave me so much time and we interviewed him and Profile St. Louis was intended to be more of a kind of, I think we call it a combination of time and what do we call it? It wasn't quite a college newspaper. It was a newspaper. So it was like I said, to profile interesting people. It wasn't real political and it didn't work. We tried to make it as a metropolitan thing and it kind of didn't make it. And I started the Riverfront Times in November that year as a spinoff of the, just to try to stay in business as a downtown newspaper. And eventually it evolved from a downtown newspaper. And at the time we started at 110 South Central, which is now the county jail. So there's that. I'm not in it, at least. But that's our first office was part of what is now the county jail.
Do you still read the Riverfront Times? What do you think of, the direction the publication has gone in?
Oh, I do. I read it online mostly, but I'm proud of the fact that it's still going 40. It has been, 40? This year it'll be 47 years. And not that many of the alternatives have lasted. And Sarah Fenske does a remarkable job. I still think every week they're breaking stories, often multiple ones, that the mainstream press isn't getting to. It's a little different now just because the resources have been reduced so much for the daily newspapers around the country. And so there's a little more of a window of opportunity for the RFT, but you're constantly seeing, I mean, they break as much news as anybody else, and it's got a great air about it. I think it's terrific. I mean, it's a tough time. You got to remember, when we started the paper, there were not only were there no mobile phones, there was no internet. And so it was a different world. And one of the keys to making it successful in the 80s, in particular, when it really grew, I mean, people talk about the personal ads we were known for. But the big key to it was we were the only place in town. And imagine, this is when boomers like me were young and going out and running around the bars. It was the only place in town you could find live music. And you could find it, you know, it wasn't on your phone again because there was no such thing. But we cross-referenced the bands and the bars, and we printed 100,000 of them, and they flew off. We could have printed a lot more. That's all we could really afford to justify with the ad base. They flew off. And let's just say pretty much all the bars advertised the hell live music because it was the way they got their customers. And I'm proud of the fact that we were sort of part of that whole era, helping bands and bars. You know, and of course, it was great business for us. And so, yeah, I think it's doing great now.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, you hear people talk like very fondly about the 80s and 90s, the music scene here in St. Louis. Yeah. And it's really cool that the RFT set had such a huge hand in that.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, no credit to me, but it just worked out that way. I hired some great people that knew music, too. I mean, I went.
Right.
I like music, but I was no expert.
Well, yeah. And it's impressive, too, that they have such a strong digital presence. And, you know, obviously when it was founded, the internet wasn't even a thing. So it's very impressive that they've been able to kind of parlay this into a new era. So
they've done a great job. And I actually don't know the ownership well at all, but I know Sarah is just remarkable.
Yeah, she's great. When we come back, part two of my interview with Ray Hartman. So you grew up in the 2nd Congressional District, and now you're running for Congress there. How does that feel?
Well, I have to correct you on that. I grew up in what you said was in the 2nd Congressional District. I fought my way off the streets of Creve Coeur. We were tough kids.
Okay.
And I lived in a place that until this past election was in the 2nd District. I don't mean when I say correct. You wouldn't have known this. It was gerrymandered into the 1st. So I lived just north of Olive, west of 270, not far from where Martin Dugan went to church and not far from where he lived, in a subdivision called Tempo. It was in the 2nd District. Now, if you cross Olive, literally go across, it's on the north side. If you go to south side, you're in my district. In the 1st, that's how it got gerrymandered. And I actually lived in Richmond Heights, which I know I don't live in a place that was in the 2nd that got moved to the 1st. There was a great deal of gerrymandering done in this district. Maybe it should be in the Hall of Fame of gerrymandering. And because the Republicans and Ann Wagner wanted to make it a more R district. And it's about a +7 R district now, which in my mind, which is by far, that's Cook Political Report, you know, where it was just technically 7% more Republicans than Democrats. Mm-hmm. But that's still a swing district. And it's the only single digit district in Missouri out of the 8. And so it's the closest and I think very flippable district. And, you know, I intend to do it. This is the first election since 2024, the first general election since Roe v. Wade was eliminated as protection for women's health, reproductive freedom. And that's a big deal, and particularly in suburban districts like this one. And this is still a suburban district.
So, you know, you've been alluding to this, that 2024 is a unique election. Besides Roe v. Wade, what else makes 2024 unique?
Well, Donald Trump being on the ballot is certainly one thing. I think a lot of people who might view themselves as pro-life, having seen Donald Trump's act for the last 8 years, and the words I use to describe Donald Trump are reprehensible and predator. But as a journalist, I'm used to borrowing other people's words, and those were the words Ann Wagner used to describe him in 2016 when she was demanding he step down in the name of her work with sex traffickers after the Access Hollywood tapes, which is, of course, back in the news these days with the Stormy Daniels trial and so forth. After the Access Hollywood tape, Ann Wagner was one of the only Republicans in Congress to call for him to step off the ticket in 2016. I mean, literally said that Mike Pence should be their nominee. This is 4 weeks for the election. That's how intense she was. And I, you know, normally I'd give her credit for it, but she has completely, by the time the election came around, she apparently decided he wasn't so reprehensible. She changed her mind right before the election. And a couple months ago, she said he's the only candidate who can save our country. I mean, I don't know about anybody else. I haven't noticed that much. We followed Donald Trump, unfortunately, several times a day since 2016. And I haven't seen anything less reprehensible and predatory about him. But maybe she has.
So we're talking about Ann Wagner. She's held this seat for over a decade now.
Right.
What else do you think that she has gotten wrong in her tenure?
Well, the big thing is she's got kind of a regal attitude to the district. She just isn't. The one thing I'm hearing, Rachel, everywhere I go, I've run into a couple people who told me they're going to vote for Trump and me. She's been in. She's held office 12 years. I don't know what you were doing 12 years ago, but that's a long time. In 12 years, the scoreboard is real clear. She has not held a single, been willing to attend a single debate, whether it's the League of Women Voters, whoever it is, sponsored. She has not debated a single candidate. In 12 years, she's not held a single town hall. And, you know, these are things that now it's up to 12 years. Democrats, we've had some great candidates before. They've pointed it out. But now, they start, most recently, and this happened just in March, I think people got to see what happens when a candidate is a person is disconnected like that from the district. She's, you know, let me be clear. Her office operates just fine as a constituent office. There's no issue with that. She certainly doesn't miss votes. She does that. But the missing piece in her service to the district is service. She doesn't view her constituents as someone that she should ever be subject. She should never subject herself to any kind of to working without a net, to working in a way where she has a spontaneous interaction that's not managed by her staff. And that's, you know, that's why you won't see any encounters with her on YouTube, because she just keeps herself from being, you know, like this week, I'm going to go to Washington, Missouri, which is pretty conservative. And who knows what kind of, but it's also not, I'm not going to a carefully scripted drop by at a restaurant. I know it's I'm going to the wine fest. You know? And my point is, I think you've got to be accessible regardless of your viewpoints. People want to, what I'm hearing from people is they want someone, member of Congress who hears them. And in March, I think we got the returns in. Josh Hawley, of all people, who's not somebody I admire, as you can imagine, a senator, to his credit, got St. Louis included in the compensation for radioactive waste victims. I think the one thing I hear, and I will say this, it's been surprising to me. I can go to the furthest parts of South County, Telegraph Road, and I was just there last week, and people are angry and sensitive about the fact that in our district, the Manhattan Project resulted in thousands of our citizens, even though this is way up in North County, it's felt everywhere, that thousands of our citizens were infected, were poisoned by the federal government. And everybody, there's no disagreement about that. You know, I'm talking about the Coldwater Creek, all the Weldon Spring, all the radioactive waste that got dumped as a result of being home to the, St. Louis being home to the Manhattan Project. And we have had thousands of people die or continue to suffer. The feds say it's not even going to be removed entirely until 2038. Mm-hmm. People are suffering, and Hawley got the compensation. And when that compensation came out, the day it came out on March, I want to say it's March 7th, it was 2 months, over 2 months ago, Ann Wagner came out and said she was too expensive. She criticized it, and she immediately was just got an avalanche of criticism. But she said, we're not about raising the federal deficits. I mean, those were her words. And she got crushed on it. And so she tried to come out and scurry for cover 2 weeks, 2 weeks to the day after that. After she didn't carry the ball and get this the aid package. We're talking about $3.7 billion to St. Louisans. After she wasn't willing to do that, it came out and she said she was outraged. she pretended like she had never said that. She's in the Kansas City Star last December and again on March 8th, I think it was in the paper, where she said, and basically, here, I'll read it to you. I don't want to. We're just not looking to raise our deficits and debts any further than they already are, adding that there would need to be a legit pay for. This is what she said publicly the day it came out. And I'm like, you don't, how could somebody, let's just say this, you could not be connected and sensitive to your constituents and even consider that kind of reaction. Like she's going to like fight for the federal budget over on the backs of cancer victims in St. Louis? I mean, sure, we all want the budget to be managed better, but, you know, there's 435 representatives in Congress. The other 434 are going to fight for their districts, okay? That's their job. And so, and I think this cuts totally across ideology and party lines. Mm-hmm. And I bring it up because it's, we have talked as Democrats in the past about the fact she won't meet with people, but this, my point is, this is what you get. This is what happens when you don't meet with people. Mm. It's one thing to talk about it. I mean, who cares? Somebody says, well, she won't debate Ray Hartman. Well, so what? Who cares about that? I mean, this is no honor, great honor to debate me. But I mean, that's not what it's about. It's about being connected and sensitive to your district.
Do you hope to have a debate? Are you pushing for that?
I'll, you know, sure. I mean, first of all, it's not my role to push for it. It's groups like the League of Women Voters and Channel 9, whoever does, which I won't be talking to as a channel. I mean, people like that, excuse me, institutions like that are the ones that should push for it. Of course, do I? Now, I was on Sister Public, I was on with Mark Cox and said to him, you know, specifically, I will debate her anytime, anywhere, on any subject with any moderator. So that's my standing offer. You know, I'd be happy to debate her on your show, although I'm, you know, Cox would be a better home for her as far as having somebody on her side.
Well,
but my point is, I would debate her on this show. I mean, if you want to, sure, I'll debate her anytime, anywhere, any subject, any moderator.
All right, Ann Wagner, get ready for the email from me. I'm going to try to set this up.
Please do. Please do. You'd be perfect because you'd be a moderate moderator, which would be appropriate. But I'm serious. I'll debate her in any form. I don't care where it is.
Well, speaking of moderates, you had said earlier that you're more in the political center than you were when you started out in journalism and politics. How has the progressive wing of the Democratic Party changed in your career?
It's changed a lot. I mean, and it's become... It is just, and I think it's healthy to have wings of parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, I don't see at all, because I'm on one side, I do not see an equivalency between the progressive wing, which I think it has sometimes caused a lot of strife within the Democratic Party. I don't see any equivalence with the people who are basically... I don't know if you call them anarchists, what they are on the right, that, you know, the folks that think that people who participated in a capital insurrection on January 6th are patriots and heroes, that killed, you know, that beat up cops and stuff. But, you know, sure. I mean, I think you're seeing now, certainly the protests over Palestine are a good example where I think, as someone more to the center than perhaps I once was, that, and I was somebody that was just a little too late to be protesting the Vietnam War. I just got to college after that. But my generation, as we say, was really known for pushing the anti-war. This is, I see it, maybe it's because you get older or whatever, you see the different generations. I think that some of the protests, while I completely understand the concern about humanity, international law violations, and just, we just can't be bombing children. I mean, it just can't be part of that. I think that the venom that's been aimed at Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, has been misplaced in our party, because I don't think, you know, I happen to be somebody who supports Israel, very strongly, and I don't think the issue is our support for Israel. The issue is, because I think it has a right to exist. I don't think Bibi Netanyahu has a right to exist politically, okay? And so one, I would probably, Ann Wagner is a supporter of Israel, as I am. She's probably more of a supporter of Bibi Netanyahu than I am, and I happen to be Jewish, okay? So, you know, so I understand the rage. I don't sympathize with making this, you know, because essentially some of the protests, well, again, I've never criticized somebody for peaceful protest. I think it's an example where I'm different from the progressive left because, you know, it's not acceptable to take something this complex that Joe Biden, I think, has handled as well as he can and make this essentially serve Donald Trump's interests with these protests.
So given how polarized politics have become, you know, you are saying you're more in the center. You brought up the problem solvers group in Washington. What else do you plan to do to foster bipartisan cooperation?
Well, in general, I think we got to talk across the aisle. And I understand I am very much, I mean, when I say center, I'm sure you would plot me on the liberal side, meaning I think it's very important that we increase the minimum wage. I think it's very important we protect Social Security and Medicare, which is something that I don't know if that's it should be a centrist issue, but the Republicans had definitely. And while Ann Wagner, I don't think, has come out and said she won't protect Social Security and Medicare, she is not known for bucking her party. And they have definitely have Medicare and Social Security in their sights. And she was opposed to Obamacare and lowering prescription drugs to $35 as part of her party. She was opposed to the infrastructure bill as part of her party. I would be much more active, you know, aggressive in, I think we need to, I happen to be on Medicare. It works quite well. I think we need to, you know, protect Medicare. And we also need to expand as much as we can coverage under Affordable Care Act. And so those are the kinds of issues I think, and on the environment, you know, if you say the words Green New Deal, it's a dirty word. Well, I do think we need to move away from coal. And I do think you look at the radioactive waste. There's also the Labadie plant. Ameren's Labadie plant is one of the most toxic. I think I saw an article. It might be the worst pollutant of its kind in the country. And that's in Franklin County, my district, our district. And I intend to make that an issue because Ann Wagner has defended the pollution levels out there. And so while I've always said, oh, you don't want to run on the environment, I think the air people breathe is just as important to them in terms of their own lives as some of the issues that get more ink.
Ray, how can people get involved with your campaign? How can they donate? What website do they go to?
That's so nice you'd ask. Ray Hartman for Congress.com. It's pretty simple. Ray Hartman. Hartman's got two N's. It's F-O-R, Congress.com. And I really appreciate it. And again, if you're not, the way I look at it, this is obvious I'm running in the 2nd District, and a lot of your listeners are in the 2nd District, but many, probably more aren't. But I look at it as, it's 435 districts nationally, and by any measure, if you read any political stuff nationally, it's really expected that the House race is going to come down to the wire. And if I'm the 218th district, and we're the only single digit district in Missouri, if people want to have a voice for the things they know I'm for, you know, I think a very proud day for me would be voting for Hakeem Jeffries as Speaker of the House of Representatives. So even if you're not in the 2nd District, this race has some relevance.
Ray Hartman, I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
Thank you, Rachel.
You're listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Really hope you enjoyed my interview with Ray Hartman. If you missed any part of it, go ahead and podcast the show. You can either do that by downloading the Odyssey app or getting the show anywhere you get your podcasts. And that's true for every episode. If you miss any part, you can go back and listen to the old episodes. one thing that's been in the news a lot is this cicada infestation. And I'm going to level with you guys. Where I live, in the city of St. Louis, I have not seen that many cicadas. I've seen a couple. Let me take that back. I've seen a few carcasses. I have not seen any living cicadas. But I thought we were going to be like invaded by these things. When they use the word trillions, I mean, come on. I thought it was going to be like, you know, just a wall of cicadas whenever you walk out of your house. But that just hasn't been the case so far. So we've had a couple of people on the DGS very nice. Send us, you know, like emails letting us see their cicada infestation. I'm going to be honest with you, though. I haven't seen anything yet that's blown me away. So if you have just a crazy amount, I mean a crazy amount of cicadas, I want to see it. I want to see what's going on because that's what I've been expecting. And that's the world we live in now, right? I always say this, but the year is 2024. We have expectations. When you tell me trillions, I want to see the most cicadas. I want my mind to not be able to comprehend how many cicadas I'm seeing. Now, all I'm probably going to have to do is wait a couple of weeks and they're going to be out and I'm going to be really regretting going on this rant on the radio and jinxing it. But at this point in time, just haven't seen an amount that's impressed me. I think we can do better, folks. If you have a ton out there, please, Twitter, Rachel ZSTL, send me the pictures of your cicada infestation. I would like to see them. Really, in general, if you ever have anything you want to say about the show, you can get at me on Twitter. You can get at me on Instagram. It's the same handle, Rachel ZSTL. You can also send me an email, rachel.zimmerman@odyssey.com. That's rachel.zimmerman@odyssey.com. If you would like to be on the show, if you think you have a compelling topic, if you think you would make a good guest, or if you just have something you'd like to hear me talk about, I would love to hear your feedback. So thank you so much to everybody who listens. You guys are great, and podcast downloads are going well, and I'm just very, very grateful that people tune into the show. It is so nice, and I appreciate everyone who tunes in. Next week on the show, we're going to talk about downtown St. Louis. This is a topic I am very passionate about. You know, a lot of people have a lot of bad things to say about downtown St. Louis. Some of it's justified, some of it's not. But I'm going to talk to a gentleman who lives downtown and is very up to date on like the crime data and everything that's going on in the city. And so I'm very excited to speak to him. So look forward to that next week. I'm also looking forward to, oh gosh, let me look at my calendar here. Yeah, Saturday, May 25th is the reopening of City Garden. Probably my favorite place in all of downtown St. Louis. Got to be one of my favorite parks in the entire city of St. Louis. It's just so gorgeous down there. They've got the little pool. They've got the splash park. They've got all this artwork, the beautiful building, which the new burger restaurant is going into. That is all reopening on May 25th, and I'm super excited to see that happen. So again, if you go to that opening or stop by City Garden, send me some pics. Send them to me on Twitter. I would love to see them. Again, it's just one of my favorite places in the city, and I'm really, really excited to get down there and see what's going on once they reopen. All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I will talk to you next week. I hope you have an amazing weekend. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.